This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle, and to my left is the returning Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
Nice to have you back on the program. You've been a world traveler, and our schedules didn't meet up, so I gave you the week off.
I'm having one of those summers where it's all friends getting married and bachelor parties.
Oh, I'm sorry. You must be lonely. You must be yearning for a wife that you can marry and spend the rest of your life with.
Crickets.
Still a committed bachelor, are you?
You know, you're settling into it nicely, I might add.
Uncle Greg's such a nice boy. Why did he never marry? I am. I'm enjoying my newfound singleness. I'm finding myself doing lots of different things, and honestly, I wouldn't be getting myself into so many different situations. Not sexually, you dirty perverts. If I didn't have that time, so not
solitude
bad.
Is peaceful.
Honestly, you know what I do most of the time when I'm here by myself? I sit with the TV off in the dark and stare at the ceiling. And it sounds really sad and depressing, but I think so many thoughts. It's really weird.
Introspection. You gotta plan for it. But I don't know if that's entirely true. I imagine you're more like Matthew McConaughey dancing around with bongo drums in the nude and a male stripper.
All right. Up next, ladies. So, no, I have really, through this process, for those of you, I am finally emotionally capable. I made it through an episode with Maya, so I figured I can conquer anything now. I got divorced recently, and I've at some point we'll get into all that. That's not our topic today, because I have some thoughts on getting divorced versus when the government says I am divorced. And, you know, it has been... And it actually kind of really, it's going to tie into a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight. So maybe we'll hold off on my introspective thoughts here in just a second, because I want to address the last episode. So we'll have a bit of flow. We'll have a nice transition for the listeners. We'll do a good podcast this time. So Maya was on last time, and as always...
She waged jihad.
She waged jihad on me and the listeners. She did not hit me. She did not get up and leave. The NAP was not violated this time.
She did say if I was here, she was going to point a gun in my mouth.
That's true.
And then said she didn't like me, but that's all right, because I know she's prone to sensationalism, so there's no hard feelings.
I got hurt messages from Joe Ruiz and Ryan Ripley. What does that mean? I'm like, she's just kidding. Like, no. Maybe. No, Maya was using people in the Wallosphere, as we'll coin it, that the listeners would know and would recognize. So to kind of point out, here's why I don't like that particular political philosophy or handling things that way.
Well, it was more personal attacks.
Yeah, you she really doesn't like.
Yeah, I know.
But that's just because you keep blocking her. You've got her blocked.
Well, I didn't even know I did.
Well, you did, and you kept her blocked. I mean, that's not fair. She's the one that's supposed to block you.
It's voluntary.
So, I'm not voluntary associating with him. Anyways, Maya, by the way, went through castration. I don't know if that's the correct term.
Her twig and berries are now just twig.
Dedictadectomy, is that what it's called?
An addictomy or a chop a dick off of me, according to Rush Limbaugh.
Chop a dick off of me. No, she... got castrated. She's doing really well. She's very happy. We're very proud of her for this. Believe it or not, we'll explain why some other time. But if you really want to know, go check out her Facebook page.
Is it because so she can't have children and spread?
But that's part of it. Yeah, there won't be any more little Mayas. No, I mean, for her, this is a huge, huge step. It's a point of no return. It's an acceleration of the process that she's undergoing, and it's a huge commitment. And commitment is always difficult and good and tough and interesting at the same time. So Maya and I are going to do a Creating Maya episode about it soon. So go to look up Creating Maya, M-I-A-H, and we walk through the whole process. But, you know, enough about that. But we wanted to let you all know that Maya's doing really well and recovering nicely. And we're hoping for a kinder, gentler Maya soon. Although I am a little worried that now she knows how to cut nuts off, that I'm next.
Yeah, I'd be a little nervous. I wouldn't sit on the same couch as her if she records again.
You were funny though. You're like, so let me get this straight. Maya doesn't like me, so she'd walk in and put a gun in my mouth, but she will go do this because the government has walked in and put a gun in her mouth.
Yeah,
that was, but. What was the thing that you sort of, we'll give you a chance to respond. We want to direct you to the Facebook page. Jeff Wolf.
Who's one of my favorite listeners.
Yeah, the opposite of Josiah Crones. And Jeff wrote a very thoughtful piece in the messages, and so we posted it up on the Facebook page about the last podcast episode. And go check that out and get in on the discussion. Maya responded, and so we want to hear your thoughts. But what were some of your thoughts on Maya's episode last time? If you were here, if I had invited you to that podcast, which I didn't because...
I wouldn't have been able to make it anyway.
I know. I needed just me and Maya. Sometimes one-on-one is, you know, less explosive.
I mean, you know, last time it wasn't good.
No, it wasn't good for you. It wasn't good for her.
It was way worse for you than me. I just sat there and watched you get hit.
And then you got hate mail, though.
Well, I always get hate mail.
I know. So what were the things that you really kind of found yourself disagreeing with?
You know what? I listened to it, and this has always been my contention, is that I don't really have any philosophical differences with Maya. You know what I mean? Like, for me, and this is something that Jeff wrote to We Are Libertarians, Jeff Wolf, is that voluntarism is the end goal for all of us, I believe. I mean, I would really think that you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in our Wallosphere, quote-unquote, that would believe any differently, that that's where we'd love to see society end up.
Yeah, completely.
I know. And so for me, I don't have any philosophical difference for the end point. I have a difference in tactics. You know, I believe you'll catch more bees with honey than a grenade launcher. But for me, though, the one thing that really bothered me, and this is something I said to Jeff, because we had a conversation through Facebook earlier this week, and is that when I listened to the podcast, and then I was actually listening to a different podcast that was more politics-oriented, what struck me was the similarities between liberals who see themselves as victims and anarchists who see themselves as victims. They take a look at society, and everything society does to them, they are a victim of. Liberals do the same thing. Ronald Reagan talked about that before. Society is no longer blaming the criminals. They're blaming the collective for creating the criminals. And at a certain point, you have to say either I'm just going to walk away from it and abandon trying, or I'm going to stand up and I'm going to fight and I'm not going to cry about all the ways I've been wronged.
Right.
And I don't know if that's something that's talked about a whole lot. Like, I disagree with the whole brutalism and then throwing Jeffrey Tucker under the bus because he got a new gig, blah, 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 blah. Like, those things to me are libertarian brutalism is just another name. There have always been those strains. Don't you agree?
Right. There's like 1,500 different... Everybody... Like, the thing about libertarians is they're so libertarian they refuse to call themselves libertarians.
Yeah.
And it just gets old. And, like, there's a video that's probably outdated because there's too many monikers now. But if you go to look up the 6 types of libertarianism on YouTube, there's... Ron Paul, I think, is in the title. And it kind of walks you through the differences. There's constitutional Republicans, there's anarcho-capitalists, there's, you know, what is James, the
mutualist. Mm-hmm.
You know, all these different kind of strands that work together, cosmetarians. But
we are the neo-fascist crypto, or the crypto-neo-fascist libertarians.
Crypto-neo-fascist socialist libertarians.
Yes.
That's what I prefer to go by. or just statist, as
yeah.
I would say. But... yeah, there's always a million different, and to me, I'm just exhausted by it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so tired of the navel gazing and all of it. I mean, if you can't tell by the podcast frequency, I'm fatigued with politics a little bit.
I wasn't nervous because I knew that I was still interested in it, and I knew Joe was, and I knew you'd come back because
right.
You don't have the kind of personality that can not get pissed off about things. You know what I mean? Things bother me.
I felt this way this time last year, and then Snowden hit in June of last year, and that really relit my fires until, you know, someone threw
cold. Oh, in a solid 6 months of, you know,
right,
you being angry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to like Spangle when he's angry.
No. I will eat Hershey's Kisses and cry on my couch in the dark when I'm angry. There will be weeping, okay? But, so, I go through spurts, and I think I'm like everybody else, and I'm focusing on certain aspects of life. And, you know, I just find myself, I find it hard to get motivated to care about a lot of libertarian stuff because, frankly, there are a lot of times, and I don't mean this as a commentary of anyone, of my or anybody else, I just find myself not liking libertarians at large. Like, sometimes libertarians are just hard to deal with. They're rude. They're not nice people. They're the biggest whiners.
Know-it-alls. You
know? Know-it-alls. And maybe it's just because I'm part of that camp. Because when I was a Republican, I really hated Republicans.
They're just as bad.
They're just
Democrats are just as bad. Yeah, but, and the nice thing, though, about libertarians is they're usually philosophically consistent.
Sure.
Whereas you go to Republicans, and it's work for small government till it's a uterus.
Now, you always got to bring abortion into it.
I didn't say it. You did.
What are you, Barack Obama?
I didn't say it. You did.
I will say, though, in person, libertarians are like the nicest people ever. But as soon as they get on Facebook, they're dicks.
They are. They are social media terrorists. Right. They really are. They cannot wait to go around and flame and start fights and tell you how you're wrong and what you need to do. And if you don't, you need to go kill yourself. But then in person, they're out there like helping the elderly.
Right.
You know?
They're like, hey, gee willikers, ma'am, can I help you across the street? But on Facebook, it'd be like, die, ma'am.
Yeah. Ma'am. You didn't like my Proud Hound meme?
Oh, what are you, a statist?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But do you, I remember when we went up to Michigan to see Creating a Young Americans for Liberty at the Michigan Convention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, it wasn't that. It was the We Are Libertarians, or not the We Are Libertarians, it was the Young Americans for Liberty at IUPUI when they had Dr. Friedman and Dr. Randall Holcomb from Florida State debate about essentially the finer points of anarchy and minarchism and what the state would devolve into. And I think I texted you and I go, how hilarious that we're sitting here listening to this debate and these messages are being read by the NSA. Like,
right.
It seems a little bit cart before the horse.
No, but I think you've got what you've got going on is you have a whole generation of libertarians being well-trained in politics and in philosophy. And so, yeah, I think at a lot of these SFL-YAL things, it may on the surface look like circle jerk. But 20 years from now, that's going to be a healthy political movement because not only are they steeped in political philosophy, they're also steeped in political tactics.
The tough part, though, is translating that into political systems.
Well, the part of it, too, is just getting along. It's like, just shut up long enough. Like, Democrats fight. It's a very group-based party. You've got your Latino bloc and you've got your,
it's identity politics.
Yeah, and various different groups. And they all come together to elect. They fight like crazy in the primaries, but then they come together and win. It's like, if we could just get libertarians to kind of get along enough. But we can't figure out what party we want to be in. We can't figure out if we want to be in politics. We can't figure out, like, we just argue about everything, it seems like. And what we really need is just less arguing and more doing.
Yeah,
you know, in many different ways, and we'll talk about one of those ways in a little bit, but not just political ways. I'm talking about personal ways too.
And it's never easy. Like, you know, look at even in the United States, and you could never say that the Republican Party, as it currently exists, is the party of small government or trying to peel government back.
Sure,
they are progressives by any way, shape, or form, and then the Democrats are just progressives on steroids.
Even your small government Tea Party people are. Many of them are social conservatives, and the Tea Party now has devolved into the John Birch Society with conspiracy theories. I mean, it's, you know, we'll talk about Bergdahl in a little bit, but I don't think you could find any shred of helpful information if you went to any Tea Party Facebook page right now and we're trying to find out information about Bergdahl or Benghazi or any of that.
You'll find lots of pictures or the latest video of Barack Obama trying to lift weights or Nancy Pelosi getting schooled by a high schooler at a picture or a picture opportunity.
Stuff that doesn't matter to regular people.
No, it's just, it's retail level quick buck politics. And but at the same time, though, the thing about that makes the progressive argument so appealing is they have solutions to problems in theory, and they sound like legitimate alternatives. Republicans get hammered as the party of no, and no, they're essentially the same thing.
Right.
And for libertarians, it's no, we don't state a good enough case of what the alternative actually looks like without the state.
Sure.
And that's what we need to develop and focus on. Not does government have the right to exist or does it not?
Right. Solutions. So let's get into our first topic. We've ranted against people, but we'll kind of delve further into Maya in future episodes. But if you want to sound off, if you disagreed with Maya, listen, I don't always agree with Maya, but I know that Maya represents a significant part of the libertarian movement, and so I'm comfortable with having her come on here and say things that, gosh, I can't ever run for public office probably because of that last episode, but I don't...
You can run as a libertarian.
Sure. Bad luck libertarian. Runs for office, wins.
Well, do kings run, though?
No. President, please. That's my fake title.
You're like the Emir of Qatar.
Right. I have one of those outfits. I'm wearing my fake livery right now. So, anyways... So if you disagree with Maya and you want to talk about it, you want to get it out, go to the Facebook page, just look up Weird Libertarians and look for Jeff Wolf's post a few days ago and sound off there. But, we want to bring you all kinds of different views because I think it's important.
Can I add one thing, though? I don't entirely see the – or maybe it's just me and I'm not smart enough to figure it out.
Well, that's possible.
Creating a closed Facebook page to spread liberty seems a little counterproductive.
Well, they're being mean and blocking them, so...
They're going to take their ball and go home and hope that liberty just shows up?
I did my best to kind of point out some of the...
hypocrisies.
I don't even know if that's... That might be too strong a word.
Well, thankfully, Jesus didn't do that, or we'd all be something else.
Right. I guess if you want to have a private clubhouse, I get it. Trust me, we have a private clubhouse where we say things that would immediately end all of our careers, like the Snapchat guy or whatever. But... I just found it a little funny that they're going to troll other people, but this group didn't like it when they got trolled.
Oh, no. No.
There were funny things like that I tried to kind of point out. But
how dare you?
Right.
You're not pure, Chris, because you are society materializing into how they are victimized.
So, I have gone through a tough time. Let's get back to what I really want to talk about, which is me. and thank you to all the listeners for your patience. We have not been consistent for a little bit, and a lot of it is just because you got to try and find the energy, you got to try and find the sheer will to let Greg Lenz into your home once a week. It's very difficult.
Yep.
He started plying me with pizza.
I usually have to have a token gift.
Yeah, you have to have a gift. If you want to come to my home, you must bring an offering.
Now, though, it's gold, frankincense, or myrrh.
I'll take any kind of myrrh. Leave your gold on the doorstep. So thank you for your patience, and we're trying to get back to a regular schedule. I can't say that we're going to be able to do it every week. The biggest problem is my morning schedule. I get up at 4:30 in the morning, and so it's tough to have Greg over at 7:30 on a weeknight and then get up in the next morning. So we're definitely going to shoot for once a week continually, but please be patient if it's once every two weeks.
And by September, we'll probably go back to Saturday, so it won't be an issue at all.
Cool. That would help. Now, I ran into a situation, and I want to talk about charity because I have had an unbelievable week. And this is probably going to be a little more of a personal episode than we're used to because I want to talk about, a lot of personal situations, and I'm going to be kind of veiled. Let me give you the Glenn Beck. I just can't say everything that I'd like to say, but it's huge. It's the biggest... life-altering. It's going to change the course of history, Greg.
What exactly are we talking about?
I don't know. So I have a friend, and I just a friend had a question about Facebook, and I do that for a living, essentially. I work on social media. And so I helped this person with their question, and we got to talking about their situation, and they're in a very bad personal situation. They're in a shelter. They're about to move into a home. They've lost all of their personal belongings. They have two children, and, you know, they're close to my age and looking at completely restarting their life. So you spend all these years building up what little you've got, and then all of that is taken away from you because of circumstances beyond your control. And it just really broke my heart, because honestly, I've been through that a little bit, but not anything close to what this person and their kids have gone through. And, you know, using the power of social media, I just put up a Facebook post on Monday and said, listen, I've got a friend. They need help. They need donations. They have to completely restart their home. And essentially what's happening is whatever I'm able to put together for this person is what they're going to have on the planet. You know, they've got four walls, but they don't have anything to put it in. And they're the only source of income, and it's just a very difficult situation. And so, you know, hearing that, you know, I thought about it today. You know, there are so many people who you may not hear a lot of these situations where it's that catastrophic, that deadly. But how many times a week do you say, man, if you need anything, let me know? And you really only kind of mean it. Like, if they called you and said, you know, you said it, anything, right? And you'd be like, oh, crap.
As long as it is not in any way, shape, or form the slightest bit inconvenient.
Right. You know.
Or something I might want in 10 years.
And honestly, I really did the least I could do, which was put up a Facebook post and just say, hey, you know, I'm going to collect donations for this person. And I didn't expect what happened to happen. 3 days later, I've had 65 people contact me. I've taken 3 cartloads of stuff. The next week and a half of mine is planned out to pick up donations, to pick up furniture, to move this person, to move their kids. And, you know, my Facebook friends responded in a way that completely changed this person's life and my life, too, with their generosity. And when they walk into their new home, they're going to have a furnished home. They're going to have all the necessities, clothes, you know, a lot of it hand-me-downs. Most of it is hand-me-downs. But to this person, that is better than new, because
it's hipster.
It means a new life. And, you know, it transpired over 4 days and 65 Facebook messages and emails and texts. And I don't mind spending a few hours a day. I certainly is not any big deal for me to drive, you know, an extra 5 minutes out of my way to go load stuff into my car, keep it in my place, and then take it to them once they're settled and ready. It really has not inconvenienced my life in any way. In fact, it has been an enormous blessing. And, you know, I have gone personally from being emotional and upset about selfish things to being emotional about selfless things, because you like my black pastor impression there?
Look at you.
I know. I'm about to get a Jaguar and a fancy suit. But it is true. I mean, it is. What? Was that racist? Did I go Justin Bieber?
Oh, boy.
I just am blown away by the depth of people's responses. Like, people are, half of their house is going to this. There's one family that is donating a Sleep Number bed and a dining room table and end tables and just giving until, you know, and maybe it's all stuff that they were going to take to Goodwill, but, you know, they have inconvenienced their life a little bit to help arrange this stuff, deliver it, or have us come pick it up and move it around. And it's just huge. You know, And this has taken place in 3 days with the power of social networking. And it isn't because I have 5,000 Facebook friends. The vast majority of people that are responding are high school classmates, which is very interesting because I've got all these libertarians who don't want there to be government charity responding, and the people that are responding are the Democrats and the Republicans and quasi-libertarians.
But they're Plainfield people, above all.
Which, listen, if you're from Plainfield, Indiana, you are a better class of human being. Am I right, Greg?
Well, yeah, we're well... I said it this morning. We're well-mannered, right. Respectful gentlemen.
Good-looking.
Incredibly good-looking.
Right. But, so I don't think you have to have a big network. But by and large, it is mostly classmates from high school that are donating stuff. Millennials. I would say that of the 65, I'd say 90% are millennials, which is interesting too.
Probably a bit of a sampling error since that's the majority of your friends that actually follow you on Facebook. Sure. But
way to blow my sample size there.
Sorry.
What are you, some sort of scientist? But, you know, I was thinking about this last night, and when I was kind of thinking, like, what should we talk about tonight on the show? And I thought, how does this relate to government and politics? And the truth of the matter is that if I had said to this person, let me hook you up with government assistance, what would happen in that situation? In 3 days, their apartment would not be filled. They wouldn't have gas money for the next month and a half. Their kids wouldn't have gently used but perfectly good and exciting toys, more toys than they probably had in their lives. They're being spoiled by perfect strangers who have no idea who this person is and will never know and will never see pictures of the kids enjoying the toys. They just know that somebody's in need and they want to help. If they had been sent to a government service, what would they get in return?
Resentment.
After 6 to 8 weeks, they might get resentment.
No. I mean, like, by people. Like, as far as, like, you know, people tend to resent taxes. People tend to resent those types of things. Well, that lazy person doesn't want to work, and they take my taxes. You don't realize, you know.
So let's talk about, at all these different stages, how it affects each and every person. So let's start with the person and their kids. The person and their kids have had a very rough situation in life, and this has, in my conversations with them, completely restored so much faith in their fellow man and has given them an incredible amount of hope where they weren't really sure how they were going to handle things, and now they look at it and they go, we have a shot at a totally normal life. We're going to be safe and happy. You know, there's going to be tough times, but it just in 2 weeks, their life is going to be set up and is working well. As opposed to if they went the government route, this person would have bureaucracy and red tape. And what kind of charity? What could they really kind of get? Could they get a couch gently used? Could they get money for a couch, even, you know, it's, and could that be done in 2 weeks? Maybe they could get a certain amount of income from various government agencies to help buy these things.
They could probably get a mansion if we didn't have to pay the bureaucrats to distribute it.
Sure. But it certainly wouldn't be in 2 weeks. It certainly wouldn't be in the time frame that, like, this stuff is needed now. This stuff is not needed in 6 to 8 weeks. You know, fill out a form.
Next year's W-2s have been, and we can prove it.
Right. Oh, you don't have an address? I'm sorry, we can't figure out how to find the funds so you can go to Goodwill and buy a couch. So they're harmed in that, and they don't receive the benefit of having people give to them and having so many people give to them. It really, I think, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of that help through my divorce. I've had a lot of friends and family give me so much support, so much help, and to the point where you don't feel like you deserve that. You really shouldn't. You don't want to bother people. You don't want to have people go out of their way to do things for you because, listen, I'm tough. I can do it on my own. You know, and it is a little embarrassing to say that you need help, but
Sometimes just like, you know, an arm around your shoulder. You're doing well, buddy.
Sure. By the way, please stop that.
I know.
But my family, I was brought so much closer to my family the last few months. My relationship with my family is better than it has ever been, at least since my parents got divorced 17 years ago. My relationship with many of my friends is much, much stronger, and it's because they gave to me. They, you know, they decided that, listen, I can take a little extra time, make a little extra effort to just check up and say hi, or to give that coffee table, or to do this, to do that. And, you know, I'm sure now that I've been on the other side of that, I know how it makes me feel to help a friend, you know, to have the ability to say, oh, you need help? Let me just do it for you. As opposed to, well, if you ever need anything, let me know. And then just walk out down the road to throw up the post and say, listen, hey, guys, can we organize this? Can we do this? And then people respond en masse. Does two things for me. It makes me feel incredibly hopeful in people. So I have hope. It makes me less depressed because I don't sit here and think, gosh, society sucks. By the way, that's happening on both ends of the giving-receiving. Wow, people don't suck that much. Maybe there is good in the world, as opposed to the constant drumbeat of there is nothing but pure crap in our society. You know, and secondly, it gives me something to focus on because it just feels good to give to people. It feels good to help make a difference in somebody else's life. And by extension, all the people, the 65 people that have given to this family, all have those same feelings. Like, some of them have been through a similar circumstance, or some of them just, they've had this thing in their garage, and they need to get rid of it, and they haven't taken it to Goodwill for whatever reason, but man, they feel moved to act. And they feel good about it. They feel good knowing that even though this isn't my friend and I don't know who this is, you know, a lot of people are just kind of placing blind trust in me that, hey, you know, I'm not making it up.
If you don't know, he's the libertarian equivalent of a Nigerian scammer.
Yeah.
I notice. I love the new furnishings in your place, by the
right,
way.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, I had a friend come over yesterday. They're like, your place is really messy. I'm like, I'm storing things. You know the story. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm
Was like, that Hannah Bananas?
No, I don't want to get into it. It's touch and go. But she'll assume it's about her. That's okay. She's not listening. But, you know, those folks are giving back, and they feel good about it, you know, knowing that their thing that they were going to take to Goodwill is making a difference in somebody's life. So everybody benefits in this equation. You know, people get rid of stuff that they don't want, and they give their stuff to people who need stuff. And both sides feel good, and the transaction is done quickly. And all it takes is just a little bit more of us going, hey, do you need anything? Are you okay? What can I help you with? So society is strengthened because we're being better people to each other. As opposed to me sitting here, let's talk about the government model for a second. So if we're going to give charity over to the government...
I'm so ready for this.
I know.
I nerded out for an hour.
So this is the libertarian model of charity. This is how our neighbors are helped in a libertarian society. It means that instead of just thinking, oh, well, I'll refer them to a government number and pay my taxes and give them a token, hey, let me know if you need anything, taking the time to say, hey, how are you doing? What are you up to? Oh, wow, you're having a tough situation. Hey, what can I help you with? What can I do for you? That's a libertarian society. What does government charity look like, Greg Lenz, in this day and age?
Government charity looks like somewhere between probably about 30.
Let's define government charity, okay?
Can't technically be called charity.
Okay.
So
are we talking about government welfare, or are we talking about the government-created 501c3 charities? Let's start with government welfare and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you're a person who is going to rely on benefits from all levels of government, what does that look like?
The VA.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's what it looks like.
Expound that is the, upon that a little bit.
So there's the big VA scandal right now. The head of the VA, the Veterans Administration and Healthcare Distribution Network, just recently resigned because it's a scandal because he gets a certain allotted budget amount each year in order to service the the medical needs of veterans, and the hospital network has been purposely delaying treatment so that people would die, in that way they wouldn't have to have those expenditures.
Wow.
And that has come to light. Now, granted, it's a little bit more complicated than that because, in fact, they had plenty of money, they just didn't spend it. Okay. So that's an even bigger issue, but that is what it looks like. It looks like this individual we're speaking of.
Right.
Her entire life's falling apart, literally in front of her face. And this individual, and I won't say any identifying information, but she has the fortitude to take things into her own hands, to go do something that gives her mobility, that gives her options. She packs it up, makes the decision, goes to a private organization, and there she receives some help. Instead of having to download her W-2s, get her last 2 months' bank statements, take that over to the Medicare office, let her know that in 6 to 8 weeks, Betty Bureaucrat's going to give her a yay or nay or thumbs up or thumbs down, or she's going to get Section 8 housing or she's not. And it completely dehumanizes the entire process because government, and I said this to you the other day, alienates man from his other man. It completely alienates man from his other man because part of the human condition is getting to be a part of someone's success.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to see that person fall, you know, bad things happen to them. It's sure. Random act that happened to you.
Right.
You're down on your luck.
Let's even say that it was partly or fully their choice, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that drug users get way too stigmatized in this day and age, you know, and somehow again, I will always tell people to go check out the documentary on Netflix called The House I Live In, or go on YouTube and watch it. We treat drug addicts who make it's a choice, but it's also you have an inclination towards dependency genetically or behaviorally. And so many times we just say, well, that's their choice. You know, hey, just stop.
I pay taxes to take care of that sort of thing.
Sure. You know, it's whether it's just a random act or their choice, other human beings need help out there. Because I don't know if you've noticed, life sucks.
We're all humans.
Right.
We're all in this together. It's crazy to look at it any other way.
Right.
There's like a quote by Aristotle, be kind because everyone you meet is fighting their own war or something along those lines. And that's literally what it is. Everybody's, you know, fighting their own battle every single day.
Yeah, and that's part of why, you know, a lot of libertarians, if not most libertarians, don't believe in nationalism. Because the human experience now is essentially what it was 100 or 1,000 years ago. And too many people lose their lives over nationalistic causes when at the end of the day, we're all just trying to succeed and feed our kids and feed our family, and then we get drug into these, you know, these political discussions and life or death situations with wars.
It's why people don't have time for politics or even care to vote.
Right.
Because they are struggling so hard just to even make it.
Right.
Who's got time to worry about whether or not this public policy is going to be beneficial?
Right.
If it benefits them in some way, sure, they're going to pay attention. But if it doesn't, if it's something relative or sort of irrelevant to their daily life, who cares?
Yeah. So the whole process is just dehumanizing and ineffective. It's not nearly as effective as private charity between two individuals or between an organization.
And that is fact. Yeah. Like, that is literally every study that I went through today.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest estimate I saw was that for every dollar given to charity, 61% makes it to the recipient. The highest estimate I saw for a government dollar collected making it to the recipient was a little over 41 cents.
Holy cow.
It is absolutely astounding how inefficient government is. And to his credit, I don't love, obviously, state-funded but privately administered organizations, but George W. Bush, very few people know this, his little pet project that he loved was the office. I'm going to mess it up because I had it written down, but I don't remember it right now. But essentially what it was a government organization that allotted funds to churches and religious institutions and community organizing institutions.
Yeah.
And they would just distribute the money. And they couldn't discriminate based on religion or anything like that. It was purely how effective you were.
Yeah, I mean, in Indiana, it's the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Indianapolis, it's called the Front Porch Alliance because neighbors sit on their front porch, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, anything, it just would be better if we didn't steal that money to try and distribute it to the charities that the government thought were best.
And to think that they do it. Take a dollar, spend 67 cents on their own people so someone can have a job and disapprove someone that needs it so that maybe sometimes 33% ends up making it to the individual that does need it, and you call that caring?
Right.
Fraud.
Sure.
It's fraudulent.
Yeah.
And it's
money laundering.
It is literally money laundering because those jobs aren't created here.
Right.
Those jobs are created in the grand old buildings of D.C. Go walk around and you're going to see where those actual money for welfare, where those dollars go.
Right.
Huge brick or limestone buildings that are probably $1 billion to build today.
Well, and then they hire people that, you know, God forbid we get rid of the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, because all those people who get their money from the government, who pay those salaries, they're not going to vote for that. They're not going to vote out a politician. And we've reached a tipping point where a certain percentage of the people who work in the United States work for the government.
Oh, yeah.
Of any type, but especially the federal government. It grows all the time. Isn't it something like 40% or something?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's insane. How many
people? Essentially, I mean, in my opinion, we're on the way to help the healthcare industry being a part of the government economy anyway,
right.
And then you're over the 50% tipping point.
Yeah. And then you can't win. So, again, another reason to be cheery. Thanks for tuning in to We Are Libertarians. But
there's almost a bigger thing at play in that it's. Do you remember we talked about a show where humanity seems to be coarsening the way we interact with each other? Social media acts as that buffer where we think we can just say whatever we want. I can't remember which episode that was. But
well, you should listen to all of them.
Well, yeah, listen to every single one, especially the one where Galt attempts to hit Creighton and Creighton suplexes him to the ground and makes him state how dominant he is over him.
That happened. It's in the 40s, maybe the 30s or 40s, and it's just labeled The Fight. And the physical altercation came afterwards, but no one was injured because Galt couldn't fight him properly.
His tinfoil hat fell right over his eyes and he couldn't swing.
God love Galt.
No,
I'm working on a time to bring him back because I'd like to see him come back on the podcast and catch in with our little buddy and make sure he's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no. You're enthused. You're really enthused.
No, I am. I always liked Galt. Like, I had no issue with Galt. I thought Galt was hilarious, but he was an instigator extraordinaire.
Oh yeah,
he was. Oh, him and Maya.
Oh,
if they disagreed on something.
Oh,
well, Galt would end up dead.
Well, yeah.
Yep.
But
do you want to be an accomplice to murder?
It really depends on who it is right now.
Have him Skype in or something. That'd be better. But. You know, I think that, like, social media, like your example, it has brought people back together.
Sure.
Like, I think that our society went, like, the bigger government has grown, the less we feel responsible for the people in our community.
Well, let me say, I mean, I have 5,000 Facebook friends. I do not know all my Facebook friends. I mean, all the time I'm out in public and people come up and say, hey, we're Facebook friends. I'm like, good for us. How are you? You know, and I hope people don't take that personally. It's just you kind of... It just gets so big at a certain point. You don't know 5,000 people. You can't. And
the king can't know all the serfs.
Exactly. I'm very important, okay? If you can't tell. I've got many imperial things to do, like pet mittens and eat chocolate and cry. But, you know, I have been able to see people that I've never met. I mean, I've met a couple people that... Man, we've been Facebook friends for years. We talked all the time. I've just never met him before. And
it happened on a podcast. Creighton brought a kid from the University of Indianapolis, and you guys had met at like cocktails and conversations.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, we're Facebook friends, man. You're like, oh, my.
I'm like, hey, buddy.
I saw the terror and the white just flood into your face. Yeah. I was like, this is great.
I tried to learn a lot from Rupert. I'm like, hey, sport. Roar. I'm going to be like Babe Ruth. Hey, Dad. So, applesauce. But, you know, I've gotten to meet several of my Facebook friends. I've gotten to reconnect with several old high school friends. I get to spend time with a lot of my friends because we're going to be moving furniture with each other. You know, it's and it's very social. I mean, social media has caused me to be social with people in person, and it is good for that. But there is also a great video right now called Look Up. It's had 42 million views on YouTube. It's by some British guy about looking up and admiring the beauty of life and don't miss it because you're staring down at a tiny little screen. So social media certainly has its purpose in life, but
it's not good or bad, but it is an amplifier of however you use it.
Right.
For sure. Because, I mean, it wouldn't have been possible to do what you did unless you would have made 65 phone calls, and it would have taken way more than that to get responses.
Sure, sure.
You know?
I mean, I still have to message with these people to arrange stuff, but, you know, it's much more minimal than trying to think, oh, gee, because I couldn't call. I'm thinking of Chris and Joe and a couple other people, like Joyce. I'm going to meet her tomorrow to pick up stuff. I've never met Joyce. I don't know Joyce. I wouldn't have her phone number to call Joyce. And then I'm meeting an old high school friend I haven't seen in 10 years to pick up a bunch of stuff. I don't know her number. I don't know how to get a hold of her. But it's nobody you know. But you just give me that look, like, I know I'm single, but I'm not trying to, you know, lay pipe with every person I meet. I'm just sitting here being single and enjoying it, being alone.
On multiple dating sites.
Shut up. Listen, some of us swipe right. I can't help it. But it does. It's brought that social aspect, but there's also that social terror aspect where it's like you think that just because you just think people think they can say anything.
It is. You know? It does coarsen. But right. I think it also, when there's anonymity or there's a little bit of a buffer, I think people are way more likely to be real because there's not the social cost involved.
Right.
So they're more than willing to help completely, whereas if it were a different social environment, they may not have had the self-confidence to do it.
Right. You know, this person, they never would have asked for help, ever, ever. But you know, it provided a platform for us to begin a discussion, so then I could help them.
Exactly.
You know, so it's good and bad.
So the question from a libertarian perspective is, what sort of, how do you leverage that to me? How do you show that that's what a libertarian idea or policy looks like?
You know, the Rush County folks, Paul and Joyce Morrill especially, out in Rush County, Indiana, in Rushville, they constantly say, listen, it's not about telling people how to live. It's about living the libertarian lifestyle. It's about the golden rule. Live out the golden rule. I mean, even if you're not a Christian, even if you're not a believer of any faith, if you're a hardcore atheist, man, what is wrong with the golden rule? If you wouldn't do that, you wouldn't want somebody treating you or saying that to you, why would you say it to somebody else? Just be decent to each other. And I think if we can boil libertarianism down to that, it's like, let's just be decent to each other. Is it decent to launch a cruise missile from a drone? No. You know? Of course. Don't give...
Is it at Josiah Crone's? That's all I'm saying.
All right, now I'm on board.
Exactly.
It's a
Bush
Canada,
doctrine.
Canada? Liberate the out of them.
Oh, yeah. They have oil.
Yeah. You know, you're going to get yourself in trouble with Arkansas. Arkansas is going to be mad at you.
Oh, gosh. So, I didn't even know we broadcast a rabbit ears down there.
Our good buddy Roger loves to taunt my good buddy Roger, apparently not Greg.
No, Roger's a good guy. I just like to tease him.
So, liberation is coming soon to Little Rock.
He just has that libertarian need to tell you what you do wrong and why it offends him and violates him, like how it's a crime against humanity.
So I think we oftentimes, as libertarians, we start out at our outreach booths talking about, here's why the government sucks, here's what it's doing wrong, instead of saying, here's what it could do better, here's how we could provide hope, or even take it a step further. Which is something that I always wanted to do as the executive director of the Libertarian Party, which is what Democrats have done so successfully, is have more of a community organizing mindset. You know, this is by far the most effective organizing tool used across the world, a.k.a. Muslim Brotherhood or any organization, you know, or Obama's organization, not comparing the two, just saying rapidly growing community organizations that bring about rapid political change, it's because they went out into the community, identified needs, fulfilled those needs, and said, don't worry about those other people over there. They're ineffective at helping you. Trust in us to help you. And
give me your poor, your weak, your hungry.
Sure. And now the government is ineffective. It cannot help you.
And that is statistically proven.
Sure. And so as libertarians, instead of setting up a booth at the county fair,
Food drive.
Do a food drive. Do a clothing drive. Find a local homeless shelter or women's shelter or rehab clinic. If you're so against the war on drugs, go help the victims of the war on drugs. Help them restart their lives. Be a support for them. And somewhere along the way, gently say, listen, those people over there are ineffective at helping you. I'm doing this because I believe that we can do it with each other, we can do it together, and we can do it more effectively and better if we don't have those people over there getting in our way.
Libertarians are going to hate this, but if it ever spreads, it's going to be based on almost communitarianism. You have to know your neighbor because your neighbor has to trust you right. when there aren't guarantees and laws and all those things in place.
Well, when you take the government out of things, you take the fight out of things. Like, have you ever...
Except for some of the voluntaries.
Sure. But, yeah, I really learned this in the gay marriage debate. You ask people, like, do you love your gay nephew? Absolutely. Would you give your gay nephew a couch if he were starting a home? Absolutely. Do you think your gay nephew should... No, you wouldn't give your gay nephew a couch?
No, Rick Santorum wouldn't, but...
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Do you think your gay nephew should get married? No, and I fought against this, blah, blah, blah. It's like, because that's a political thing. It's not a personal thing. It has nothing to do with the humans interacting one-on-one.
Do you think Jesus cares and has time to worry about that?
I don't want
to
get into that. But that's a whole different can of worms. But what I'm saying is once you make people fight for their personal values in the government arena, then it becomes contentious. Society becomes more contentious. It becomes more brutal. The only brutalist that we ought to be worrying about as libertarians is the government. That's who I care about. I don't care if you're a libertarian brutalist. I don't care if you're a thick or thin libertarian. You're welcome to listen to this podcast because we love all of you, except Josiah Crones.
Ugh. You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and lump in the Idaho Libertarian Party in general.
Yeah. You're never going to believe this.
What?
I just looked down at my phone.
Mm-hmm.
4 minutes ago, I received a text message from Gina Martinez.
Oh, my God.
I haven't heard from Gina since that podcast, the Faded podcast, which at the end of the show I'll explain to you about that podcast, because there's a bit of wall trivia that I'll share, because at this point I don't care.
You know, I was lonely there for a while. You two quit Liberty on me, and I was sitting there, and I was, thank God for Joe Ruiz up in South Bend, brother.
Right.
If it hadn't been for you, I'd have probably been fundraising for Liz Cheney out in Wyoming.
But anyway, so final thoughts on charity before we jump into Bergdahl, because I got to go to bed soon.
No thoughts on final. I mean, realistically, it's and we talked about it on that episode with Bittner, is you do have to meet your neighbor, because if liberty and the lack of government, since there won't be a guarantee, something they can go like in Tommy Boy, the guarantee fairy, they can rest their head on at night. There has to be a level of trust in a society.
The guarantee fairy.
No, seriously. Like,
I love... Yeah,
the Tao of Tommy Boy. You know, there is some truth in that, because when people don't trust each other is when they want government guarantees.
Right.
When people do and they have communities and they know that they have support systems that exist that are way more effective than anything a bureaucrat could deliver in 6 to 8 weeks, it's a beautiful thing.
Sure. I mean, it's just so frustrating.
And all it does
is... It's the false sense of security. If we got rid of this, then this would happen. Well, in so many of those instances where if we removed X government program or bureaucracy, then what would happen to X? Let's say if we removed government police, well, then criminals would just run free. as opposed to now, I mean, we're in Indianapolis and we have a shooting every single day.
Well, they wouldn't be criminals if they weren't running free and committing crimes anyway.
Whatever. Don't use my own circular logic against me.
No, I'm proving your point. Like, right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like gun-free zones at schools. Well, guess what? People are bringing guns to school and nobody's protected.
No.
You know, the only people with guns are the criminals. I mean, and so many instances. Well, gosh, poor people would be hungry if we got rid of all these government programs. Poor people are starving now. And you're creating more people because they have this false sense of security that I can go to the government and get fed. And so guess what we do? The people who pay taxes, we either A, are old Republicans and resent the class that gets benefits, or we just are the liberals who think, oh, well, the government will take care of them. I don't need to give to charity.
No.
I don't need to do this. You know, and you know, we talked a little bit about it. If you're a 501c3, you are at the mercy. There's so many. If you take government grants, if you take government money, when you have that government identifier of a 501c3, which you legally have to have if you really want to do any kind of real serious charity work, you're beholden to so many different rules, regulations. You take the government's money. There's so many strings attached to it.
You can buy BIC pins, but you can't buy anything over 99 cents per package.
You can accept this type of money from these certain people.
That vote Democrat.
And that has to go into this fund. And they outline what funds you can have. And if you raise money from this type of event, it has to go into this fund. And that can only be used for personnel, but it can't be used for office supplies and rent. I mean, the comptrollers are necessities in this day and age to try and deal with the red tape.
Well, they're the closest thing to like a WPA that government's ever created.
Sure.
Like Dodd-Frank and any type of the Civil Rights Act, even though I'm personally a political proponent of it, I think it could have been done better legally. Those things, all they do, they're make work projects. It's no different than WPA than the New Deal. All those did was create the lawyer and accountant free employment or full employment act.
If I wanted to take this person and give them money, let's say I didn't raise furniture, let's say I didn't raise, you know, books and DVDs for the kids, and I didn't raise goods. Let's say, you know what, and this would be more efficient. Instead of me spending hours and all this gas money driving around Indianapolis, picking things up and making appointments and doing all this, I just put out a Facebook message and I said, listen, I've got this friend. Here's the situation. They need help. Send a check here. Send a PayPal statement to my bank account. I will make sure. Now, obviously, there's ethical, like, people question that. And, you know, even getting all this furniture, I had one person ask if the furniture was actually for me. I'm like, I'm not going to lie about this.
That's for my cats, duh.
Right. My cats need a queen-size sleep number bed. But, no, that's my new neighbor upstairs. Don't worry about it. So, I'll tell you about her later. Hey-o. So, stop waving. She can't see you, you creep. Get off the ladder.
No, but, I mean, I think what we've talked about today is that government in no way, shape, or form makes helping people any more efficient.
Right.
It doesn't do a better job of it cost-effectively or purely from a logistical perspective. And there's a social cost to it.
Right.
It makes you like your fellow man less.
Yeah.
It desensitizes you to the human condition of struggle.
All right. So moving on to our second subject. The big news out of this week is that we are negotiating with terrorist Greg Lenz. That we have traded 5 Taliban fighters from
high level, likely to recede back into terror.
Sure, in Guantanamo Bay for the life of an American soldier, the only known POW.
The only known POW remaining. Yeah,
right. So, give us some more of the details, because like a lot of people, I may have missed some of the details this week. As I state every week, I know nothing, so that's why we have Greg Lenz here.
Well, it's a really cloudy situation. In my opinion, he deserted. From everything I've read, from all the interviews, unless this is government propaganda 101, which obviously could be, There have been so many reports and letters he left behind talking about he just no longer saw the point of it all, and he even left a letter to his troops or his team saying that he was going to walk off into the mountains of Pakistan. He is a guy that was disillusioned by his purpose in the war on terror. He no longer felt that the cause was justified and or moral. Did he possibly help the Taliban and Al-Qaeda? Maybe. I can't say for certainty. It almost looks like it, because from the reports of the people that went looking for him, six American soldiers died trying to search for him after he was no longer there. On the search mission, all of a sudden they went from not being very nervous about like any IEDs or any cars exploding that they were searching around or any buildings. All of a sudden, it was direct hits over and over and over.
Really?
And the Taliban had reported that, Al-Qaeda had reported that he was helping them. Would they do something like that? Absolutely.
Sure.
Sure. Misinformation is the name of the game.
Right.
His dad opens the ceremony when President Obama has it at the White House in Arabic. The thing is, in Afghanistan, the two languages, neither of the main spoken languages are Arabic. It is Pashto, and then I always forget the other one. But then Arabic, though, is the language of the upper-level leaders within Al-Qaeda.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the common language for reading the Quran, too. So, in all that you've read, what wrongdoing did Bergdahl... I mean, is there... what do people think he did? Do they believe Al-Qaeda now just because Barack Obama made a trade?
If they're on the right, they do, since it's election season.
Like, what I'm trying to figure out is, so often the conservative media is just mad because Barack Obama did something, or they're mad because he didn't do something. And so, because Dad is a Muslim and looks funny and speaks Arabic, and then Barack Obama traded him for five terrorists, Bergdahl's a terrorist, as opposed to worshiping at his feet because he's a POW, which we used to do. Now, all of a sudden, because Barack Obama released him, we're not doing that.
Well,
the conservatives can't make up their mind on this.
Is, though, a ton of cloudy evidence. What's funny is, you know, Michael Hastings, he wrote an incredibly long story about him in Rolling Stone.
Right.
And Hastings was of the opinion that he was a deserter and a sympathizer.
Really?
And it converted to Islam. And Hastings, was he maybe paranoid? And if you talk about Hastings, you almost sound like a conspiracy theorist anyway.
Sure.
So we're not going to. But he was a great reporter at one point in time before the drugs got to him.
I mentioned Gina texting me, right?
Yeah, right.
But, so, let's say, so, six men died searching for him.
Mm-hmm. But he left. He left his troops.
All right. So he deserted. We don't know why.
Unless he was kidnapped, which he hasn't said he ever has.
Okay. So let's say that he deserted. To me, regardless of his POW status and the fact that he's been recovered, if he did wrongdoing, he shouldn't be treated differently than any other military person, especially if it costs six lives. So if he deserted and it's found, if he's tried and he's found to have deserted and... you know, or committed treason, then he should be held accountable for that. But there should be a fair investigation for that without political influence. I mean, to me, that just seems like the most reasonable thing, right? Like, as opposed to just saying, well, he's a POW, he's a hero, we can't try him for what he did.
On its surface, yes.
Okay.
Think a little deeper. What benefit is there, even if we do suspect that he is... What benefit is there to bringing him back?
Bringing charges against him?
No, bringing him back to the United States and not trying. Even if we believe he is without a shadow of a doubt.
I don't know. What do you mean?
Intelligence.
Right.
Why would you would never...
So if he's a deserter, leave him over there.
No, if he's a deserter, bring him back on like we did.
Right.
Like I believe the five targets we gave up were high-profile targets. Barack Obama's own Justice Department declared those individuals people who would not be released. President Bush's same commission found the same thing.
Right.
These guys the last, I forget who it was. I think it was a guy's last name's Forbes wrote for Washington Post earlier this week. The last guy we released in such a situation was labeled a medium level threat.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he got back, he was the one that led the resistance in Afghanistan.
Right.
It isn't like all of a sudden they found, you know, peace.
Well, let's deal with Bergdahl first and then the Taliban second. I mean, what do you think should have happened to Bergdahl? I mean, I can't imagine a world in which we don't bring one of our own home, right?
Mm-hmm. And I do think there is some merit to that, especially if that's the case, we honored our obligation, and that should serve as almost a amount of trust towards the troops.
Sure.
That we're not going to leave anyone behind ever, right. No matter even if they are a traitor.
Yeah. We're going to, but on the same token, but we're also going to do something on the flip side that could kill more of you.
Very true.
Which is part of the conundrum here.
And the whole thing, the real issue, is it moral or is it legal? And what exactly are we hoping to get out of it, to me?
Right.
Legally, the president issued a signing statement as part of the NDAA that said a 30-day waiting period before he can negotiate something like that with a... Yeah, I guess it is a true swap, since the Taliban is a legitimate government within Afghanistan. They were, before Karzai's administration, they were the government. That's where when I hear Colonel or Alan West and those guys, I'm like, you guys, seriously, just read a book.
Right.
They are a legitimate government institution. They just follow Sharia law.
Right.
But so the President Obama didn't do anything wrong on that account, but that 30-day part of the NDAA that he signed. He signed off on it. He issued the signing statement, said he can't be held back because it could put someone's life in danger. I'm not buying that argument. And I do think there are grounds. I don't think he'll get impeached, but I do think there will be political repercussions.
Sure.
This is toxic to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean
this is more toxic than the VA.
This is... you know, you don't want to leave one of your own behind, but at the same time... And these are five guys. I mean, part of the problem is, what do you do with the Guantanamo prisoners in the first place? They should be tried. You just can't leave them in limbo like this. And the longer you leave them in limbo, the more dangerous they're going to become. Because I just don't imagine a world in which every prisoner at Guantanamo Bay dies in Guantanamo Bay. I mean, something at some point has to happen. We have to rectify the situation completely. Because it just goes against every value that our Constitution is founded on to keep people in limbo like that. Whether they're horrific men or not, they deserve a fair trial. Even John Adams went to defend the Boston Massacre soldiers, the British soldiers, and he was vilified for it. But he believed in... making sure that everybody got a fair trial. And
then he authored the Alien and Sedition Act.
I know. Well,
he was conflicted.
Men.
Yeah, complicated
men.
No.
No,
I know what you mean, though.
But I don't know. What would you do if you were president in this situation? Other than nuke every country that has the word T in it.
Whoa. You
know, it's, listen, liberation.
Australia, yeah. They got oil.
Yeah, got oil.
If we could spell China with a T, then we'd really be cooking.
Is there a T in Canada?
Sure. Yeah. Silent.
Yep, it's Canada.
If you spell it the Palin way, there is a T. No, but,
and listen, we should all do it the Palin way.
Exactly. But I do look at this situation. I just see the moral, which was the United States lived up to its morality or its agreement and obligation. We didn't leave anyone behind, regardless of whether we think he's a terrorist or not. Or he is a sympathizer with Al-Qaeda, not a terrorist. Legally, the president is on a little bit of thin ice, and if he hadn't been a constant bully and provoker of everyone in the House and Senate on the other side, he probably would have got a pass on this one.
Sure.
And yet, now he's sitting there, and he is impotent now the rest of his entire term.
You think that this is completely...
This is death to me. I think the midterms now just swung horrifically. I think Democrats are going to abandon him like Republicans abandoned Bush in 2006. Because the VA, you like to kill veterans, cool. You like to save the Muslim veterans, but you like to kill the ones that serve their country and just want to have their stuff saved.
Right.
Then you want everyone to buy health care, except you don't want any veterans to get the health care that they're entitled to.
Right.
And then you love Al-Qaeda. which right. is pretty close to what the Tea Partiers and the John Birch, the modern John Birch Society, was right. labeling you with at the beginning. Like, this is the worst imaginable scenario. Then throw in the EPA announcement. Mm. You just lost every conservative union Democrat in the United States.
Explain the EPA announcement.
So there was an EPA announcement saying that different states had to put together a plan to reduce carbon emissions by 30% across the board within the next 30 years, and you have to submit your plans by 2016. It isn't going to happen. The
right.
the best study that was done still shows a negative net benefit of $51 billion annually. And a 0.4% GDP loss. The other ones, the ones that are more realistic, are probably closer to losing somewhere around $120 billion in GDP.
Right.
And almost adding a point to the unemployment rate.
Right.
It is, he's kamikaze Obama is what he is right now. It's just kind of, it's sad to watch the man unravel like this and just give up all politics and throw his party under the bus.
Yeah, he's done.
He really is.
All right. Well, soapbox time. We got to get to the end here. We got to wrap it up. So, what is on your radar that maybe you missed?
That maybe we missed. VA, EPA. This is really though a peculiar and nuanced situation going on with the exchange, because the Republicans want vengeance, and if the public sentiment sways to their way, they're going to be vulnerable Democrats that are going to join them.
Right.
And you won't ever see an impeachment, but you are going to see something where this president might as well go to Camp David and play as much golf as he wants to the rest of his term, because sure. he's going to be completely irrelevant.
Mine is a personal appeal on a couple different levels. First is, if you've got extra stuff in your house that you just are thinking about taking to Goodwill, get on Facebook or Twitter, but especially Facebook, because that just seems to be more natural.
Or Tinder.
Get on Christian Mingle, you know.
Swipe right.
FarmersOnly.com. But get on Facebook. Take, you know, if you've got a couch that you don't use, or if you've got a DVD player, you got extra clothes that your baby outgrew, or whatever. So whatever is the thing that is laying around your house that you're going to get rid of, get on Facebook and just say, listen, I've got this stuff. I'm looking to get rid of it. Do any of you need this? Message me. Because you just don't know who is on the other end of that reading it going, I don't know how I'm going to clothe my kid. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know how I'm going to do that. And that might create an encounter in your life that could really alter the way and make a great impact on their life. You become better friends, and they see that your political status is libertarian and that you're living out your values. And that's the bottom line. You got to start living out your values. And Lord knows I'm not perfect, but I try to live out my values better every single day. And, you know,
you did this week.
If you just do that, then we'll all take care of each other and the government won't be necessary. You know, if we can just make the government irrelevant over time because we're such a stronger society, you know, that's a utopian fantasy, I know, but it is what it is.
It's worth a shot.
Secondly, we were vague on the podcast. If we're Facebook friends, or if you can look me up on Facebook, a little bit more information as to what's up. If you listened this long, I know that you're a hardcore fan and a beautiful human being, a wonderful person.
A credit to your race.
Yep. Wow. If you want to help out this family that I'm helping, you know, we've got a lot of the necessities. But I would like to not just have them get by. I'd like them to be fantastically spoiled. And if you have an extra $25, $50, $100, $1,000, whatever, if you can put it on, like, go to Walmart, get a Walmart gift card or a Target gift card or one of the Visa cards. Greg was generous enough to bring a Visa card tonight, and we appreciate that. And then my mailing address is actually on there. Mail it to me, and I will make sure that they get this and that they have gas and food and cleaning supplies and diapers and all the stuff that they need that, you know, an extra $50 to you may not be – it's $50 is a lot to all of us. But to them, it's a monumental amount of money right now. So I would love to be able to say, you know, perfect strangers that I've never met are giving you this money just because they want you to succeed and do well in life. So – and to look at their kids and say that there are a lot of people who care about you and want to
create
help
some
you
libertarians.
Yep, that's exactly right. Education camp starts on Monday.
Exactly.
So if you can, my mailing address is on that thread, or you can feel free to send me a message and talk to me about it. I'd love for that to happen. I'd love for our audience to help give back to this family. It's for an unbelievable cause. You're just going to have to trust me. I'm not using
trust him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a serious situation. So thank you all for listening. We love you guys. Thank you for being so patient with us and for listening. Gosh, you guys are cute. So swipe right on me. I'll swipe right on you. Right, everybody? All right. As always, next time, when we return, we promise
to do better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.